You can shop from anywhere doing pretty much anything. You might shop while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast. And however you shop, we all know and love the thrill of the hunt. But do you also know how to get the thrill of the best deals? Because Rakuten shoppers do. With Rakuten, they get the deals they love with the most savings and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Sephora, Nike, and even Expedia if you're looking to get some travel in. And getting cash back doesn't mean you have to miss out on sales because those can just be stacked right on top. It's easy to use and based on a simple idea. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back through PayPal or check. Download the free Rakuten app and never miss a deal. Or go to Rakuten.com to start getting the most bang for your buck. That's Rakuten.
This episode is brought to you by Reese's Peanut Butter Cups. In breaking news, leading scientists worldwide are conducting experiments to determine if Reese's Peanut Butter Cups are the perfect combination of peanut butter and chocolate. However, it appears the study was inconclusive, as the scientists couldn't help but eat all the Reese's. Because when you want something sweet, you can't do better than Reese's. Find Reese's now at a store near you.
Hey everyone, welcome to Let's Get Civical.
This is the podcast that breaks down politics, government structure, and dives into the context of current events, but in a super fun way. I'm Lizzie Stewart, comedian, feminist, and political junkie.
And I'm Arden Walentowski, former Senate intern, campaign staffer, and political strategist.
In this episode, we're talking about Indigenous tribes in North America.
So grab your cultural map.
And let's get civical. Hello, everyone.
Hello.
Welcome back to Let's Get Civical. I'm Lizzie Stewart.
And I am Arden Walentowski.
And I am well rested, everyone.
Shut the front door.
I know, the moment that we thought would never happen, which is, when is Lizzie going to actually get some sleep? I got some sleep.
Yeah,
and you know what? It makes a difference.
Yeah.
I hate to break it to you, but it makes a difference when you sleep as much as you should.
It's really wild how you feel less like shit, how your emotions are less triggered by things that would be less of an issue if you had more sleep.
Correct.
Your face looks different. You don't look like you're the picture of death. You know,
I know.
It's so good.
And you saw me last night.
I was dying.
Yes, you guys, Arden and I saw each other in the flesh. It was crazy to see Arden wearing pants. It was just really shocking for me.
Yeah.
And I was so tired. And everybody stuck with me so well. But now I'm a whole different person. I feel like I'm seeing you for the first time again.
I love it. Yeah, last night was super fun. You guys banged out those pizzas like nobody's business, and they were fucking delicious.
Good. I love that.
Yeah.
I love that. And this is a very special episode because it's our Thanksgiving episode.
Yeah.
Last year we did the history of Thanksgiving. So if you're curious about like the history of it, why we have Thanksgiving in the US, how we landed on that day, please listen to that episode because it's still accurate because it hasn't changed.
Herstory has not changed,
and that's why we love her. But we also this year wanted to dive deeper into the sort of indigenous like history in America because they have played a huge part, especially in the story of Thanksgiving. And yet we only tell it from the side of like the pilgrims, you know, the very quote unquote peaceful pilgrims, which we all know is not necessarily the case. So we kind of had this idea of doing this overview episode, which is what we're doing today. And then as history of Let's Get Civical goes on moving forward, we'll be doing like individual episodes on actual tribes themselves and going deep diving into individual big tribes that existed in the US long before the pilgrims did. And it's exciting.
It's super fun. Yeah. I knew that like there are various different tribes lived in different areas and they got food in different ways and they had different huts and they had different languages. Like there were things that I remembered learning about, you know, in school that I had a basic kind of overview. But what was really helpful is that I guess there's like a scholarly approach to like kind of categorizing the different tribes and it goes by geography. Yeah. And that was super helpful because then you can think of it as like a map and then within those geographic areas, they kind of group tribes together based on the languages that they spoke or the dialects of languages that they spoke, which was very interesting. So, yeah, this was a really fun one to research. And I think a great way to like go into Thanksgiving if you are celebrating Thanksgiving.
Absolutely. I agree. So before we get started, do you want to talk about today's Saoirse Ronan sources? I see two familiar faces.
Two familiar faces. A lot of this is coming from history.com, mainly because it was just such a concise version of the information.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to be really fun to go when we do the individual tribes and go and look at websites that are dedicated to that tribe or that area or whatever. But history.com, great source. And you know, you love her, the Library of Congress, which has...
I love her.
Yeah, love her. She had a little bit to say about the Native Americans or the indigenous tribes and, you know, when the European settlers came over. And she had some really great things to say about it that felt... You know, let's include a section of American government and their take on what that whole process was like.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I'm so excited for this episode. Yeah. I love those sources. And so we're going to kick this off from a very like overview standpoint like we always do. So let's start from a very overview question standpoint, which is, you know, where did indigenous tribes come from and sort of what happened to them? And again, like there's a lot that is in to answer those two questions, but this is an overview episode. And just know that when we get into individual tribes themselves, we will get very more specific. So these notes are coming from obviously both history.com and Library of Congress. I love this first thing. Many thousands of years before Christopher Columbus's ships landed in the Bahamas, a different group of people discovered America. And they were the nomadic ancestors of modern indigenous Americans who hiked over a land bridge from Asia to what is now Alaska more than 12,000 years ago. So we're going back. I don't think we've ever gone back.
This is the furthest.
This is exciting.
This is the farthest we've gone back in the go back machine.
In the go back machine. That's our go back machine.
Yeah.
So that's where we are. We're 12,000 years ago. In fact, by the time European adventurers arrived in the 15th century, scholars estimate that more than 50 million people were already living in the Americas. One of these, some 10 million, lived in the area that would become the United States. So I think this is a huge statistic because the history that we are taught is that Columbus discovered America. And I feel like, can you discover something that is inhabited by 10 million people? I would say the secret, the cat's out of the bag. It's discovered. I feel like it was a discovery to some people.
Oh, sure.
But not to 10 million. And then if you scope out wider, 50 million people. As time passed, these migrants and their descendants pushed south and east, adapting as they went. Hundreds of thousands of people lived in a wide range of environments, from shore to shore, each community or nation with its own distinct culture. So these are sort of what we've been taught are the quote-unquote Native American tribes.
Yeah.
The centuries that followed the arrival of the Europeans were years of tremendous upheaval as the expansion of settler territory and the founding and growth of the United States resulted in indigenous American communities being moved, renamed, combined, dispersed, and in some cases, destroyed. So again, the United States came on top of many communities that already existed. That history is just fact.
Yeah.
These dislocations and changes took place across many centuries, and each individual episode was marked by its own set of unique circumstances, from public negotiations and careful planning to subterfuge and deceit, from declarations of friendship to calls for genocide, from disease, starvation, and bloodshed to perseverance, resistance, and hope in the face of persecution. Library of Congress is not messing around.
She not kidding.
Mind you, this,
she not kidding.
This is Library of Congress that is speaking.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, yeah. This isn't Lizzie Stewart. This is the Library of Congress's words right now. But all were driven by the relentless expansion of European settlement and U.S. territory, and by U.S. government policies that relegated the independence and well-being of Indigenous Americans to secondary status, if that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Retweet.
Retweet.
Indigenous American communities today span the continent and continue to grow and change, but the mass relocation and other changes, most notably those of the 19th and 20th centuries, shaped many aspects of U.S. societies in ways that persist today. In order to keep track of these diverse groups, anthropologists and geographers have divided them into, quote, cultural areas, or rough groupings of contiguous peoples who shared similar habits and characteristics. Many scholars break North America, excluding present-day Mexico, into 10 separate cultural areas, which are the Arctic, the Subarctic, the Northeast, the Southeast, the Plains, the Southwest, the Great Basin, California, the Northwest Coast, and the Plateau. I just love that, like, California's in there.
Just, it's on its own. It's on its own.
It's like, here's, like, description of territory, description, California, description, Plateau.
I know, like, it's ordinal, like, directions, and also just, like, you know, description of how land looks, you know?
Right,
it's so
right.
funny.
It's a little all over the place.
It's like, a little all over the place.
Not a... not an archaeologist, I'm not a sociologist, I'm not any ish, it just,
yeah.
But I think we gotta come up with some better names for these cultural areas, if you will,
yeah, yeah.
That were a little more cohesive. And currently, according to the U.S. Census Bureau, there are about 4.5 million Native Americans and Alaskan Natives in the U.S. today. And that's about 1.5% of the population. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's so small in comparison to what it once was.
Yes.
Like, yeah. That can't be overstated enough, that it was so many more people. And it should, had we not, you know, basically caused the mass deaths of a lot of Indigenous Americans, it should be a way higher number.
Yeah, I wish I had found like what that number would be, you know, like how many.
Oh, had we had we not been
I mean, awful
to the Native Americans, how many? Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know that like how. Because I don't know how you would find that number, because there are also then other like other factors that come into play if those people are still, you know, there are other things. There's like, you know, it's a domino effect. But it would be really interesting if there, if somebody, and I'm sure somebody has attempted, if somebody's done that math to see how many people there would have been. Yeah.
Would love to know the numbers.
So we're going to talk about the different like cultural areas that Lizzie just spoke about. And it is helpful to talk about them, I think, in this way, kind of as a concept, because it just gives you like, I don't know, like as I was reading through this, it just, I was able to like picture the land. And then like, as I read stuff about the tribes and nations that lived there, I was like, oh, okay, that makes sense. Like the tribes in Alaska like used snowshoes. Oh, yeah. Like, of course they did.
Of course, that makes sense.
Yeah.
It's also like kind of how you, when you're young and you first, like how the first thing you learn about geography are the continents.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Like North America, South America, Europe, Asia, Africa, Australia, Antarctica. And then from there, the next step is like learning individually what's different about each continent.
Yeah.
And then you get more micro, and then you get more micro, and then you get so micro that it's like, oh my God, what's going on with Kentucky? You know, it gets that micro. But in order to to understand that, you have to like learn where that even exists on the globe. So I get why starting like this, which is, you know, learning, at least for me, for the first time, just where on a map they are. So like what region they're in, what the, you know, what weather is like, what, you know, those sorts of things were like, I think helps as we continue to get more micro on the tribes themselves. So I love it.
Cool.
Lay it on me.
So here we go. So let's start with the Arctic. The Arctic culture area is a cold, flat, treeless region. It's actually a frozen desert near the Arctic Circle in present-day Alaska, Canada, and Greenland, and it was home to the Inuit and the Aleut tribes. Both groups spoke and continue to speak dialects descended from what the scholars call the Eskimo-Aleut language family. Because it is such an inhospitable landscape, the Arctic's population was comparatively small and scattered. Some of its peoples, especially the Inuit in the northern part of the region, were nomads, which means they moved around a lot. They followed seals, polar bears, and other game as they migrated across the tundra, which I love that image of like just groups of people like following polar bears.
Sure.
Like, I love that. I mean, that's so amazing.
It's their buffalo, right?
It's their buffalo. It's like, that's for sure.
That's what the, I'm sure we'll talk about it, but that's what sort of our, the ones that exist in the United States did. It's like, follow the food. That's what
follow
I do.
The food. Yeah, I would too. I mean, give me a hot dog truck.
Always
I'll follow
the food.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
In the southern part of the Arctic region, the Aleut were a bit more settled, living in small fishing villages along the shore. By the time the United States purchased Alaska in 1867, decades of oppression and exposure to European diseases had taken their toll. The native population had dropped to just 2,500. The descendants of those survivors still make their home in the area today. So there's still some people originally descended from the first tribes of the
like
Aleut.
Inuit.
Yeah, and Aleut, the Inuit. Yeah. Yeah. That are still living there today.
I love, like, it's just crazy how much disease we brought over.
Yeah.
Like, we were dirty.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
it's a lot of disease.
It's a lot of disease. I mean, people in general were disgusting.
Disgusting. Nobody talks about it enough that literally every single person in Europe was disgusting.
Yeah. And they were passing things back and forth. I mean, like, you know, like we just went, we still are going through COVID, but, you know, we went through the height of COVID and it was like, of course. People were passing COVID back and forth. I mean, could you imagine that, like, people living back then? I mean, they must have just been like, you know, sneezing and, oh, here's 10 communicable diseases. Like, good luck.
Yeah.
You know, it's crazy.
Yeah.
So next we'll talk about the subarctic, which is a cultural area most comprised of swampy, piney forests and waterlogged tundra. Sounds great.
I love it.
I love it already. Give me my Blundstones and I am there.
Give me my swamps, man.
Scholars have divided the region's people into two language groups, the Athabascan speakers at its western end and the Algonquin speakers at its eastern end. And the subarctic travel was difficult, sure, because swamps. Toboggans, snowshoes, and lightweight canoes were the primary means of transportation, and population was sparse. In general, the peoples of the subarctic did not form large permanent settlements. Instead, see, they had it right. Like, they built DC on a swamp, and that shit's sinking. These people were like, we see that. We don't want any part of that. We're going to keep it moving along. Instead, small family groups stuck together as they traipsed after herds of caribou.
Love a caribou.
Very delicious, I have to say.
Oh.
They lived in small, easy-to-move tents and lean-tos, and when it grew too cold to hunt, they hunkered down into underground dugouts. They were smart.
Yeah.
They're following the meat, the food. They're like, we got to keep moving. The ground is sinking under us. We got to keep it going. And then when it got too cold, they were like, let's dig ourselves a home. This is where we live for the winter months. Great.
Bless.
We're going to take a quick break for a little word from our sponsors.
As a podcast network, our first priority has always been audio and the stories we're able to share with you. But we also sell merch, and organizing that was made both possible and easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell and grow at every stage of your business, from the launch your online shop stage all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. They have an all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system, so wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. Shopify has allowed us to share something tangible with the podcast community we've built here, selling our beanies, sweatshirts, and mugs to fans of our shows without taking up too much time from all the other work we do to bring you even more great content. And it's not just us. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Shopify is also the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/realm, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/REALM now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/realm.
Hey there. Ever wonder what happens to all those amazing screenplays that never make it to the big screen? Wonder no more. Welcome to Table Read Podcast, where we bring those undiscovered gems to life. Picture this, talented actors giving incredible performances with the occasional laugh or blooper thrown in, produced by award-winning pros. From drama to comedy, TV pilots to feature films, there's something for everyone. And guess what? We release new episodes every week, so don't forget to hit that subscribe button. Table Read Podcast, where great stories finally get their chance to shine.
Next is the Northeast. The Northeast culture area was one of the first to have sustained contact with Europeans, obviously, because that's where the Europeans landed. So that was the first group that met up with those guys. The Northeast culture group stretches from present day Canada's Atlantic coast to North Carolina and inland to the Mississippi River Valley. Its inhabitants were members of two main groups, the Iroquoian speakers, most of whom lived along inland rivers and lakes and fortified politically stable villages, and the more numerous Algonquin speakers, who lived in small farming and fishing villages along the ocean. There they grew crops like corn, beans, and vegetables. And look, they're both like living near the water. Like there's one group on the ocean doing the fishing, and then there's groups along the rivers because they also, everybody needs water.
Everybody needs water. You always got to stay next to water.
Everybody needs water. You got to stay next to water.
If you're ever lost in the forest and you find like a little, like a river or a stream, just follow the stream because it will lead you more than likely to either a bigger body of water and then keep following that along, or to civilization. People settle along water. I would settle along water.
Hell yeah.
I am settled along water.
Touche. There's like a river to my left and a river to my right.
Settle near water.
I wouldn't fish from it, but it's there.
Yeah.
Life in the Northeast culture area was already fraught with conflict. The Iroquoian groups tended to be rather aggressive and warlike, and bands of villages outside of their allied confederacies were never safe from their raids, and it grew more complicated when European colonizers arrived. Colonial wars repeatedly forced the region's indigenous people to take sides, pitting the Iroquois groups against their Algonquin neighbors. Meanwhile, as white settlement pressed westward, it eventually displaced both sets of indigenous people from their lands.
Yeah.
So they were fighting amongst each other, and then the settlers came in and they shook it all up and disbanded these.
They were fighting amongst each other, and then the settlers came and said, hold on, I want in on this, and started fighting as well. And we had guns.
Yep.
So the next region is the Southeast. The Southeast culture area, north of the Gulf of Mexico and south of the Northeast, was a humid, fertile agricultural region. I just want to be known as humid and fertile.
I've heard that about you. That's the word on the street.
Sure. Many of its natives were expert farmers. They grew staple crops like maize, beans, squash, tobacco, and sunflower. And they organized their lives around small ceremonial and market villages known as hamlets. Love a hamlet. Alas, poor Yorick.
Love a hamlet.
Perhaps the most familiar of the Southeastern indigenous peoples are the Cherokee, Chickasaw, Choctaw, Creek, and Seminole. By the time the U.S. had won its independence from Britain, the Southeast culture area had already lost many of its native people to disease and displacement. In 1830, the Federal Indian Removal Act compelled the relocation of what remained of the five civilized tribes so that white settlers could have their land. Between 1830 and 1838, federal officials forced nearly 100,000 indigenous people out of the southern states and into, quote, Indian Territory, which would later become known as Oklahoma, west of the Mississippi. The Cherokee call this frequently deadly trek the Trail of Tears. This is why Andrew Jackson is a piece of shit. Period. Yes. Period. Take him off the money. I'm begging you. I'm begging you. You can't have something called the Trail of Tears happen under your administration and then get to be on the money. You know what I mean?
No. I know what you mean. I completely agree.
Great. So that's the Southeast, which I feel like the Native American tribes listed there, I would agree, are like ones that we probably are the most familiar with as far as their names. This is like the first, section where I'm like, oh, yes, I recognize them.
Maybe because I grew up in Texas. Where you grew up. Yeah, I think it depends on where you grow up and where you went to school. Because the part that included like Ohio, I was like, oh, yeah, like I knew those. I remember learning about those tribes.
Gotcha. Yeah. So let's talk about the Plains, the region known as the Plains. The Plains culture area comprises the vast prairie region between the Mississippi River and the Rocky Mountains, from present-day Canada to the Gulf of Mexico. Before the arrival of European traders and explorers, its inhabitants, speakers of the Siouan, Algonquin, Cadoan, Udo-Aztecan, and Athabascan languages, were relatively settled hunters and farmers. After European contact, and especially after Spanish colonists brought horses to the region in the 18th century, the peoples of the Great Plains became so much more nomadic. Groups like the Crow, Blackfeet, Cheyenne, Comanche, and Arapaho used horses to pursue great herds of buffalo across the prairie. So this is like, I feel like a very stock image, right? Is
yeah.
Indigenous people on horseback pursuing buffalo. Like that's the image, you know, along with like teepees.
Yeah.
The most common dwelling for these hunters, speak of the devil, was the cone-shaped teepee, a bison skin tent that could be folded up and carried anywhere. Plains Indians are also known for their elaborately feathered war bonnets. So I feel like when we think of
a Native American.
Right, like stereotypes that, imagery that you see all the time, this is where it's coming from. It's coming from the plains, you know, indigenous tribes and elements of their living situation. So that's the plains. Next up is the Southwest. So we're moving and grooving.
We're moving along.
The peoples of the Southwest culture area, which was a huge desert region in present-day Arizona and New Mexico, along with parts of Colorado, Utah, Texas, and Mexico, developed two distinctive ways of life. So first, sedentary farmers, such as the Hopi, the Zuni, the Yaqui, and the Yuma, grew crops like corn, beans, and squash. Many lived in permanent settlements known as pueblos, built of stone and adobe. Those pueblos featured great multi-story dwellings that resembled apartment houses. So very structured. Very it is structured. Interesting. Like as we're going through, it's like some are so, there's no structure to it, right? It's all incredibly nomadic. And then there are other regions and other tribes that put down roots in a very permanent way.
Yeah.
It's so interesting. I mean, and I know that it's all basically based on what natural resources were around them, like primarily food. Like if you can't farm on the land, then you have to go where the food is going.
Right.
So all very fascinating.
You got to follow that food.
Got to follow the food. Other Southwestern peoples, such as the Navajo and Apache, were more nomadic. They survived by hunting, gathering, and raiding their more stabilized neighbors for their crops. And because these groups were always on the move, their homes were much less permanent than the pueblos. For instance, the Navajo fashioned their iconic eastward-facing roundhouses, known as hogans, out of materials like mud and bark. Do you think you could build a shelter for yourself? If you had to, using the land.
I mean, if I had to and I had time and it wasn't on some, you know, like reality show where you also have to do it while walking around naked, I could probably fashion something, but it would take, I fear, months.
Yeah.
And like, I don't know. I would probably like stick a big thing in the ground and then be like, well, that's going to fall. And then like try and like slap other like mud on it, like a gingerbread house with frosting, except like that next one would fall. You know, I just, I would like to say that I have high hopes, but I feel like, I feel like it would be rough.
Yeah. I don't stand a chance at building shelter. I don't stand a chance. I'm not good. I'm not good at engineering. I'm not particularly strong. Yeah. I don't understand how materials work together.
Yeah. That's so funny. I have a vague recollection now of being in fourth grade Girl Scout camp. And I don't remember. I mean, this is Ohio. So I don't remember what tribe we had studied, or even if we had studied a tribe, because again, 90s Ohio. But I remember, like, they took us out into the fields and they had this, like, huge, like, mock, like, teepee, basically. And they were like, here are all the parts. Fourth graders, try and assemble a teepee. And it was, like, A, super fun. B, like, maybe a good way to teach kids, like, what it would have been like to build. But also C, like, not realistic.
Because it's not
just, like, randomly there in a forest
where
there's like camp counselors to help you.
Yeah.
That was so crazy. Oh my God. I just had like a flashback to being in fourth grade. Okay. So next we're going to talk about the Great Basin. The Great Basin culture area is an expansive bowl formed by the Rocky Mountains to the east, the Sierra Nevadas to the west, the Columbia Plateau to the north, and the Colorado Plateau to the south. It was a barren wasteland of deserts, salt flats, and brackish lakes. Doesn't sound great.
Yeah.
Great views, probably, but
I know. I bet it's honestly now, I bet it's gorgeous. Like,
yes. Yeah.
I bet it's amazing. I just hear desert and go, oh God.
Yeah. Oh God. Its people, most of whom spoke Shoshonean or Uto Aztecan dialects, foraged for roots, seeds, and nuts and hunted snakes, lizards, and small mammals. Because they were always on the move, they lived in compact, easy-to-build wickiups made of willow poles or saplings, leaves, and brush. Their settlements and social groups were impermanent, and communal leadership, what little there was informal. So we talked earlier about a settlement that was like very politically sound, very politically structured. Like that to me is not political and like how we would think of it, but just like a hierarchy. There's a hierarchy and a leadership. That's not true of the people in the Great Basin. They were small groups. Sounds like very, you know, nomadic. And, you know, if you're eating lizards.
Hey, I mean, know, honestly, Godspeed. It's like it probably was good. That's the thing. It's all about how you dress it. You know what I mean? If you dry rub on anything, could be good.
Yeah.
Could be good.
Could be good. Find you some rosemary and a bush. Call it a day. Hey. So the next cultural area is California. not a state at the time.
Not the state, but the cultural area, which may look like the state of California.
Before European contact, the temperate California area had more people than any other North American landscape at the time, which was approximately 300,000 people in the mid-16th century. It's estimated that 100 different tribes and groups spoke more than 200 dialects.
It's wild.
Despite this great diversity, many native Californians lived very similar lives. They did not practice much agriculture. Instead, they organized themselves into small, family-based bands of hunter-gatherers known as tribelets. Inter-tribelet relationships based on well-established systems of trade and common rights were generally peaceful.
Sure.
I like that. I like the California culture that they got going on.
It's a society, right? It's, you know.
It's a society, yeah.
It's a very modern, civilized society that they had.
Yeah.
Okay, we have two more to go. So the second to last cultural group is the Northwest Coast. The Northwest Coast culture area along the Pacific coast from British Columbia to the top of Northern California has a mild climate and an abundance of natural resources. In particular, the ocean and the region's rivers provided almost everything its people needed, salmon especially, but also whales, sea otters, seals, and fish, and shellfish of all kinds. Fish is so good for you.
It's so good. I bet these people were super healthy.
Sure.
I would love that.
As a result, unlike many other hunter-gatherers who struggled to eke out a living and were forced to follow animal herds from place to place, the indigenous of the Pacific Northwest were secure enough to build permanent villages that housed hundreds of people apiece. Those villages operated according to a rigidly stratified social structure, more sophisticated than any outside of Mexico and Central America. A person's status was determined by his closeness to the village's chief and reinforced by the number of possessions, such as blankets, shells, and skins, canoes, and even slaves, he had at his disposal. So this mirrors a lot of like what we, like our society was, which was who do you know who knows, yeah. and how well connected are you, and how much do you have in yeah. property?
Yeah.
And then finally, the plateau. The plateau cultural area sat in the Columbia and Fraser River basins at the intersections of the subarctic, the plains, the Great Basin, the California, and the Northwest Coast, which is present-day Idaho, Montana, Eastern Oregon, and Washington. Many of its people lived in small, peaceful villages along stream and river banks and survived by fishing for salmon and trout, hunting and gathering wild berries, roots, and nuts. In 1805, the explorers Lewis and Clark passed through this area, followed by increasing numbers of white settlers. By the end of the 19th century, most of the remaining members of the Plateau tribes had been cleared from their lands and resettled in government reservations. So Sacagawea yeah. comes from yeah. the Plateau.
Yeah.
This does remind yeah. me that we still have to do an episode on Lewis and Clark. Don't think we've forgotten. We will do a Lewis oh my and gosh, Clark I- episode.
We will. I mean, I feel like I started those notes. They're somewhere. And then for oh, some reason yeah. we did something else, and I'm sure it was really important. I just can't remember.
Yeah, what it was. I think we were going to do Lewis and Clark, and then something like the insurrection happened, and we were like, we've got to put a plus on Lewis and Clark. I don't think it was the insurrection specifically, but it was,
but something like that.
That monumental where we just had to go, yeah. oh, hold on, we can't do Lewis and Clark
hold
right now.
Hold up.
We got to wait for a peaceful time. But those are the 10 cultural areas, and that's kind of the end of our overview episode on the indigenous tribes that existed here in North America long before we, the European settlers, did. I'm so excited to actually like dive into some of these tribes because
yeah,
they just were so advanced in many ways. And I feel like a lot of that history was completely lost or rewritten.
Or not even. It's just not talked about. Like, I think that in some ways we do actually know a lot about the tribes.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm sure different tribes to varying degrees, but we don't really talk about it because it wasn't important to talk about at the time.
Sure.
Yeah.
But now guess what we're doing?
We're going to talk about it.
We're going to talk about it. But that we will talk about it on episodes coming out after this episode. So stay tuned for that. We hope everybody who is celebrating Thanksgiving has a happy and healthy holiday. Everybody needs a break. So I hope mm-hmm. you eat and rest in whatever way feels most appropriate to you. And in the meantime, we love you so, so much. And if you like what you heard, you can find us on Twitter and Instagram at Let's Get Civical. As always, you can rate us, you can review us, you can subscribe to us. We love you so, so much, and we will see you next Wednesday.
Goodbye.